The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Nobody knows what's going to happen. Who knows, really? I mean, nobody, the economists, I think it's a wasted profession as far as I'm concerned, because I've never seen one that's consistently right. But nobody knows what's going to happen. But I'm, again, somebody that has a good instinct financially.
Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily. I'm Sam Livingston, your guest host for today's show. We've played that clip of President Trump before. It's from 1989. And I thought it summarized a lot of the current condition that we're in the United States. It tells you a lot, most importantly, about Donald Trump. Nobody knows what's going to happen. He calls the economists a wasted profession. And in many ways, that's a theme over the last 5-6 years, is that these experts don't know what they're doing. And in many ways, Trump is just trusting his instinct. I think that clip by itself, it shows that we're in this era where it's the end of the rule of the experts. But it also shows that Donald Trump rules like a king. And we've covered that on this show in The Trumpet for years now, that he rules like a king. It shows how complicated man's world has become. Nobody knows what's going to happen. We'll talk about that in a little bit, just watching how the stock market has fluctuated so much. And it again emphasizes what we talk about on this show, is that you need Bible prophecy. You need the big picture that shows you where it's all leading in the end. I wanted to start by just going through this article in Bloomberg. It's titled, "The World Suddenly Has a Plausible Alternative to U.S. Treasuries." Now, there's a lot that you could say Trump is doing right on a physical level, but it's amazing, without repentance, without turning to God, no matter what you do, that beast power, that Holy Roman Empire still rises. And in many ways, these solutions are bringing that power about even faster. It's amazing how God works. You can have all of your ideas and your way of doing things, and that can all be the wrong thing. There's only two ways, and God works all of that out. If you're not doing this, well, here comes the Holy Roman Empire. This article in Bloomberg, again, it's titled, "The World Suddenly Has a Plausible Alternative to U.S. Treasuries." In the first rush for investment safe havens in years, U.S. Treasury bonds are facing serious competition as a destination for global funds. And some have argued that Trump's goal with a lot of the tariffs, well, one of the goals, is that the stock market, as many have said for the last couple of years, there's too much money in it, it's overinflated, it's rising too fast, there's a reckoning coming, and the idea was to get money out of it and to invest more in these Treasury bonds. Bloomberg writes, yields on the benchmark 10-year treasury have tumbled about 40 basis points this year, briefly pushed below 4% Monday by President Donald Trump's barrage of tariffs that economists say raise the risk of a recession. That I used to understand this like 2 months ago, and I understood it for a week because I really was interested in understanding it, and then I've forgotten it totally. But watching the treasury bond yields is, I guess, the big indicator for the future of the economy. I don't know why I'm getting into that, because I can't remember how to explain all of it. Anyway, in contrast, Bloomberg writes, comparable rates in both Europe and Japan have gone up. In Germany, the 10-year bond is at 2.6%. At 2.6% reflects the prospect of a flood of bond issuance as the government ramps up defense spending. And they talk about how the same thing is happening in Japan. And this is what sets the United States apart, is this reserve currency status, and why a lot of these nations, why Europe, why Asia, are upset with the United States, because it holds so much leverage over them. Bloomberg says, while both are still below Treasury yields, they're at levels that make them look more attractive than Treasuries to European and Japanese investors who hedge their dollar exposure when buying U.S. securities. That might entice investors to shift allocations to their home markets where the policy outlook appears more stable. They're making the point that these nations are looking at ways to avoid the United States, investing more in themselves and each other. They don't like the instability in the United States. They don't like seeing a president change come in, a new administration every 4 years. And traditionally, they've had a president in office who gives them what they want, whether it's Democrat or Republican. And here comes President Trump rocking the boat. Bloomberg says, it all adds up to a world where U.S. exceptionalism is no longer is the dominant theme, with potentially momentous long-term implications. Deutsche Bank warns of a confidence crisis in the dollar, while UBS Group sees a shot in the arm to the euro status as a global reserve currency. Now, Mr. Fleury has spoken about it. You look at prophecy in Daniel 11, and the United States isn't mentioned there. It's the times of the Gentiles, a world that is operating without the modern nations of Israel present there. The United States is blocked out of global trade. I thought I would hit some highlights from the Isaiah booklet. If you don't have that, request a free copy of that. You see the number there on your screen. You can email us, td@thetrumpet.com. And in this book, there's a section about Isaiah 23. And it's this Mart of Nations prophecy. It's fascinating. I wish I would have spent more time to try to get the date on when exactly that was written. But it talks about this trade alliance. It's a weak alliance. It's unified around hatred of the United States, of Britain. And it comes together. It forms. But who could have been writing about that? It's at least 10 to 15 years old, probably older, when Mr. Gerald Fleury started writing about that prophecy. And now you're seeing it come to pass. In the Isaiah booklet, it talks about the ships, in Isaiah 23, it talks about these ships of Tarshish, and that's modern day Japan. And Japan, and as that article is talking about their own bonds, but they hold a huge amount of U.S. debt. In the booklet, it says, this powerful nation belongs to a mart of nations, including Europe. And what a dynamic market of nations it is. All of them are going to besiege America, Britain, and the Jewish nations. Mr. Fleury says, I believe that these modern economic powers help to prove what Ambassador College taught about these nations many years ago. God intended that we know who most of these nations are today. I mean, you seeing the way these countries are behaving proves that this is their biblical identity. Mr. Fleury goes on, mighty modern powers like Japan and China had to be mentioned in end time prophecy. Then it talks about Tyre, this ancient city that represents the Holy Roman Empire. Mr. Fleury says, businessmen of the Holy Roman Empire are becoming the honorable of the earth. Where are people looking? Where's the suddenly Europe is, they're the nice guys. They're not the enemy anymore. Everyone wants to go to nice, happy Europe. And the evil enemy, the United States, is getting blocked out. All of this is fulfilling God's purpose. The daughter of Tarshish is Japan today. The word daughter shows how these prophecies are dual. Two great trading blocks are positioning themselves to control the world. Both power conglomerates are discussed in Daniel 11, verses 40 through 45, and in Isaiah 23. But that trading partnership won't last long. Soon they will clash just before Jesus Christ returns and destroys both of them. Talking about the kings of the East and the Holy Roman Empire, you see all of these trading unions coming together. I think one recently was Mercosur and the EU, those South American nations, and that's even mentioned in Isaiah 23. But what's not present after there is the United States and Britain. Later on in this booklet, it talks about this brief alliance between the German-led Holy Roman Empire and certain Asian powers, Russia, China, and Japan. It says, should Europe, the resurrected Holy Roman Empire, find a way to take advantage, even for a moment, of key resources and strategic holdings of China, Russia, and Japan, it would have more than enough power to besiege the Anglo-Saxon nations and enslave them. This is why Isaiah's prophecy of an end-time mart of nations that includes both European and Asian powers is so intriguing, and why the trend of collusion between these two great economic blocks is worth watching. Keep track of this. Watch it. Go back and review that chapter in the Isaiah booklet. And look at the big picture. Where is God working? What gives you hope? We'll talk about that in a little bit as well. President Trump, he's doing this Iran deal. And I think it was Michael Oren talks about, well, it's different than Obama because Iran fears that Trump will use or actually back his threat of using force. Essentially, because President Trump is unpredictable, that's what makes him such a great negotiator and why this is different. But is that really where we should be putting our faith? And just because someone is unpredictable? I mean, that's a terrifying place to put your trust. God, though, is the same today and forever. His promises are sure. Bible prophecy is sure. That's where we have to put our trust. Who could have known about this mart of nations? Who could have known about Europe and Asia uniting together, these Gentile powers coming together to combat the United States of America? Well, if you know Bible prophecy, it's something you've been waiting for and watching for. God allows all of this because America is trying to solve its problems the way mankind always has, on its own, without turning to God. And the only real long-term solution is, again, like we've covered, repentance towards God. I think there's so many different elements to this story, but going back to that clip that I played at the start, you look at the experts for all of these years, they've been so adamant that they're right, and you're anti-science, or you whatever smear they can throw at you, if you don't just grovel before them and kneel before their opinions. You see it, watching the economy, I think it was, I don't know how to pronounce this guy's name, but he's a big investor. And he said yesterday, the stock market's going to go down 80%. I think there was another one who said that, you know, Monday is going to be the worst day since, Black Monday is the Great Depression day. And then today, CNBC, Dow rebounds 1,000 points on rising hopes for tariff deals. What did Trump say? Who knows what's going to happen? The economists, I think it's a wasted profession. This is man's world. It's complicated. It's complex. The world tomorrow is not going to be this way. You will be able to understand economics in the world tomorrow. You probably won't have to worry about explaining what treasury bond yields are and whatever that means. God's way is simple. But you do have to go back and look at what's being exposed. Like Mr. Fleury said yesterday, God exposes all of these institutions. God exposed the World Health Organization, exposes all of these health institutes, exposing the World Trade Organization, exposing the United Nations. Trump, you can argue whether it was right or wrong the way that he did these tariffs, and there's a lot of arguing on both sides, but you have to hand it to him that there is a lot of drama in the way that he did it. And it certainly got people's attention. It got the attention of these nations, and it exposes a lot of the way they deal and they operate. And it brought a lot of nations to the table right away. I don't know. Maybe that couldn't have happened if he did it sort of in that smaller piecemeal way, like he was doing it more in the first term. 70 nations so far are planning negotiations with the United States. Europe, China is stepping in. They want to hold out as long as they can. Yesterday, Netanyahu was at the White House. We'll talk about that visit in a little bit, but they talked about tariffs as well. There's, of course, on both sides, even within the conservatives, a lot arguing that we need to get back to free trade. You know, well, we agree to buy these products. You go to the store and you buy them. That means you condone the way that trade is happening. And a lot of economists will argue, well, if as long as there's free trade, that's how we'll bring about world peace. If we can all just trade with each other and trust this nation to produce this, and we help each other out, that will bring peace. But fundamentally, all of these people do not understand human nature. They don't understand the human heart. They don't have Bible prophecy. They don't understand the spiritual dimension to man's problems. How long can it go on like this? How long? I mean, what President Trump was doing is addressing a problem that maybe wasn't so dire at the moment, but how bad would it be in 10 or 20 years? I think he looks back, he looks at COVID and says, this is way worse than anybody thought. We don't have the capacity. I think about the chips for cars or anything. How is it that this is such a vital component of everything we use and the United States comes to a standstill because one boat can't get from an island in the Southwest Pacific over to the United States? I think Trump looks at a lot of that and says, we've got to bring these things back here or we're a vulnerable power. You look at even the way Trump did tariffs in his first term, they weren't nearly this extreme. Maybe he didn't realize how bad it was. COVID did expose a lot. You look at now, he just defies everybody. I mean, again, whether it's right or wrong, it is pretty impressive to see that he is just going for and following through on what he said he would do. All of Wall Street, they loved him. They were backing and supporting him. All these big shot CEOs. And now they act so surprised that Trump is, for once, a politician doing what he said he would do. Jesse put together this montage of President Trump, before he was president, talking about tariffs almost nonstop. I mean, aside from the border, it was probably the word that he brought up the most. And all of Wall Street, all of the big shot CEOs, they loved this, apparently. I mean, they all rushed to vote for him. And now they're stunned that he would actually do what he said he was going to do. Note this montage of Trump talking about tariffs.
The word tariff, properly used, is a beautiful word. One of the most beautiful words I've ever heard. It's music to my ears.
Tariffs, 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 tariffs.
I love it. I think it's beautiful. I'm going to save your industry, and we're going to make your industry much bigger because we're going to put tariffs on cars that are coming into our country.
Smart tariffs will not create inflation. They will combat inflation.
Do you believe Americans can afford higher prices because of tariffs?
They're not going to have higher prices. What's going to have and who's going to have higher prices is China and all of the countries that have been ripping us off for years.
Under Biden-Harris, or Harris-Biden, however you want to figure it, we're losing $2 trillion a year. With the tariffs, we can get that number down to a very manageable number. Even ultimately, we can break it even. We charge tariffs, we put tariffs on those cars, and they're not going to be able to sell them. And therefore, they're wasting their time in building the plant. But we'll say, build the plant over here. If you build that plant over here, there's no tariff.
I just noticed behind me John Deere tractors. I know a lot about John Deere. I love the company. But as you know, they've announced a few days ago that they're going to move a lot of their manufacturing business to Mexico. I'm just notifying John Deere right now. If you do that, we're putting a 200% tariff on everything that you want to sell into the United States.
We're going to have a smart system of tariffs. And by the way, if they don't want to play that game, then we're going to get a lot of money from tariffs. The Senate and the House have to get really smart. They've given it a bad name. Actually, I consider it one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. The word tariff, I love it. I think it's beautiful. Almost as beautiful as that chart that I looked to the right. Almost as beautiful. Where is that chart?
By the way, does everyone understand this? Do you understand? Is there
anybody that doesn't understand it? Would you please raise your hand?
Raise your hand. Does anybody not understand it? See? How simple is that?
I will impose whatever tariffs are required, 100%, 200%, 1,000%.
I always say tariffs is the most beautiful word to me in the dictionary. Then I was reprimanded by the fake news. They said, what about love, religion, and God? I said, I agree.
Let's put God number one. Let's put religion number two. Love, I don't know. We got to put that number three, I guess, right? And then it's tariff.
He said it a lot. That made me laugh out loud during that clip. 100%, 200%, then the pause. 1,000%. It was not a surprise. It shouldn't have been to anybody. I guess they didn't think that he was serious about doing this. And now a lot of his voters, I mean, he's upsetting a lot of the right people. He's upsetting the people that the radical left used to be against, right? I thought the left, they're against the billionaires. They're anti-Wall Street. Remember all the protests in 2009, 2010, Occupy Wall Street? Now you've got the Democrat Party running to the defense of all of the bigwigs on Wall Street who are losing all this money because the market is volatile. Because Trump is, there's this big dump of cash out of the stock market. And the Democrats, supposedly for the working man, are running to their defense. What a world trying to, again, make sense of all of this. I mean, when it comes to these sorts of details, who knows what's going to happen? But we've got to watch these big trend lines. We've got to watch Bible prophecy. This clip from Greg Gutfeld talking about how this is so upsetting to people who have a lot of money and who have a platform to speak about it. But what about just the regular Joe Schmo who voted for President Trump? Here's clip four.
Give it time. You elected this guy based on the fact that he's working for you. So why don't you give him the time to work? People who panic at the first sign of uncertainty, they're freaking out at the hard part. But everything in life that is worth doing always has a hard part. Doesn't matter when, that's the mantra for life. Short-term pain up front almost guarantees long-term benefit and calm after all. But it's easy to be brave during the easy part. It's better to be brave during the hard part. So the tariff is short-term pain, stock market panic for long-term reward. And when you see a lot of these people panicking, remember that 10% owned 88% of the stock market. Do you think they're panicking? No, they're buying. They're buying. Because I wish I bought during the pandemic.
There's a lot of moving parts, a lot of things to try to manage. But who's getting upset? And again, argue about the tariffs, right or wrong, but this is what Americans voted for. They voted for President Trump. VDH, Victor Davis Hanson, he has a pretty good approach to this, just about being, okay, now you've got everyone to the table. You had this big explosion. Now just calm down and start working through these negotiations before trying to fix everything all at once. There's a lot of things you would have to do to fix this. I mean, talk about income tax. You've got to give people that relief, because if the tariffs do raise those prices, just go back to the way the founders ran it. I mean, tariffs were permitted. There was no income tax. The federal government should not have that interaction with its citizens. That did not happen until 100 years ago. And then it flips over, as President Trump has noted, to where all the money now is coming from income tax, which you don't have a choice, instead of tariffs, where at least you could choose, well, I don't want that product, or I'm going to take this one. There has to be a lot of different things that change. I mean, getting rid of minimum wage would be another thing. The American worker is expensive. That's why these companies offshore it. Again, though, we're not trying to solve all of these little... This is man's world. This is the complicated way of man trying to operate apart from God. But going back to that point about this is Trump won. This is democracy that the Democrats love. He's doing what he said he would do. And you come out of COVID, you come out of the lockdowns, you come out of the perfect election, and Trump is behaving a lot more like a king because he's been burned by all of these experts and these advisors for so long. This article at the Washington Post, Inside President Trump's Whirlwind Decision to Upend Global Trade. He talks about how President Trump wasn't as wild during his first term because he had a lot of people in his administration who were against what he was doing. Remember the adults in the room? So the United States, you didn't realize it, but you were voting for technocrats, essentially. You thought you were voting for this guy. And again, there is something to be said about who you surround yourself with. But they were undermining him every opportunity they had. It says the president's decision to impose tariffs on trillions of dollars of goods reflects two key factors animating his second term in office. His resolve to follow his own instincts, even if it means bucking longstanding checks on the U.S. presidency, and his choice of a senior team that enables his defiance of those checks. It says inside and outside the White House, advisors say Trump is unbowed even as the world reels from the biggest increase in trade hostilities in a century. They say Trump is unperturbed by negative headlines or criticism from foreign leaders. He is determined to listen to a single voice, his own, to secure what he views as his political legacy. Again, it's not the right thing. We want turning to God. We want to listen to what God has to say. But you look at this dynamic between Trump and Washington, D.C. He says, you've gotten it wrong for all of these years. You're telling me not to do that, and what I said would have worked. But you can also see how this will lead to more problems down the line, because if he has this success, he's going to know, well, it's just me. And he's going to think he's the only one doing it, when it's God saving Israel by the hand of Jeroboam. And it's a temporary resurgence, and it's all for the purpose of giving us more time to repent and to turn to God. God is very merciful, as Mr. Fleury's written about after the election. God is merciful in giving the United States more time, like it says there in Amos 7. I'm just studying in preparation for the spring holy days and how God interacted with ancient Israel. They were constantly complaining. God delivers them out, and then one thing goes wrong. And this, why did you ever bother taking? They lie and say, we didn't want to come out of Israel. And God doesn't just abandon them right in that moment. He keeps working with them and giving them chances to learn. Washington Post says, and well, there's quite a bit of vulgar language right there. Trump is at peak of just not caring anymore, says a White House official. Bad news stories. Trump doesn't care. He's going to do what he's going to do. He's going to do what he promised to do on the campaign trail, says this White House official. I don't know why they're talking to the Washington Post. The Post says in Trump's first term, top aides, including Gary Cohn, then director of the National Economic Council, and Steve Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary, successfully constrained Trump's tariff agenda. This is essentially that deep state. Aides frequently sought to steer Trump in particular directions during heated Oval Office conversations, according to current and former officials. Trump's White House then was beset by internal quarrels that spilled into public view. And boy, the media loved that drama. They loved causing that chaos in there. And now it seems like Trump's got it streamlined. He's got the people that he wants around him, and he's getting the things done that he wanted to get done, that democracy voted for him to do. One White House official says, in the first term, everyone thought they were president. And now it is President Donald Trump. He's finally in control. He finally has that king-like power. You could say, in many ways, this is his first term. He's won three presidential elections, and this is his first real term in office. And going back to that clip we played at the start, he has been nothing but consistent in talking about trade imbalances for the last 40 years. And now he's finally in a position to do it. And what Democrats now are talking about, this being an unconstitutional power. And they're going to sue him. They're going to take him to the Supreme Court for using these Emergency Economic Powers Act. I mean, look at how Congress is so ineffective for so long, can't get anything done except pass these porker spending bills that boost inflation probably a lot more than these tariffs ever did. They can unify and come together to do that. And they can come and unify together when it comes to thwarting the Trump agenda. They're talking about getting, again, more Republicans, and they're just going to go one nation at a time, and they're going to vote for these resolutions that, well, there's no emergency powers there. Get rid of those tariffs. Congress won't do anything except thwart the Trump agenda. That's the only thing that can rouse them to action. President Trump got a pretty important ruling from the Supreme Court in his favor. He's been deporting these illegal gang members. Illegal gang members. They're illegal immigrants, and they're also gang members. And he said, you don't get due process. First off, you're in the country illegally, and you're in a terrorist organization. That's why he calls Tren de Aragua legally and MS-13. They are terror organizations. You don't. Maybe you'll have your due process, but we're not gonna. You're not gonna sit in our jails for years before you come before a judge. You can go down to El Salvador, and we'll work on you later. And that judge Boasberg said, "Nope, you've got to bring him back. They need to be roaming free, I guess, until their court date, because that's due process, right? That's exactly what the founders would have wanted, for these violent criminals to just roam free until the court system can get through two or three other illegal immigrants." Here's clip one of Pam Bondi reporting on this Supreme Court ruling. Clip one.
These liberal district judges thought that they could control our entire country's policy, Donald Trump's policy, on keeping America safe. They cannot do it. And this was, again, a landmark ruling for the rule of law yesterday. And it's so important because these flights will now continue. These terrorists, they are foreign terrorists. They are alien enemies to our country, and we will continue to deport them. We are going to keep America safe, and a liberal district judge is not going to stop us. And that's what the Supreme Court ruled yesterday.
There's quite a bit of technicalities that they decided on, but it was a 5-4 decision. And Trump's picks, Amy Coney Barrett, sides with all the liberals, sides with all the women. John Roberts would have been over there. Whatever. What point did I want to make on that? Oh, the main thing that they ruled on was essentially that you can't judge shop anymore. So Boasberg is in Washington, D.C., and he's making decisions on these cases in Texas, and the Supreme Court says, no, you've got to go through Texas judges. So that's kind of the big upshot of this, is that this big tactic is that, oh, we can go find a district judge in Hawaii. We can find a radical leftist in Rhode Island. We can find one in Washington, D.C. and say, no, you can't judge shop for these sorts of things. Here's another clip from one of Trump's advisors, Stephen Miller. This is clip 9.
The Supreme Court brutally slapped this down, and they did cite the 1948 Supreme Court decision, which I had cited many times, that stated very affirmatively, four presidents had used it, that once the president made that decision and invoked this act, that it was his constitutional authority to do it, number one, and number two, it was not subject to judicial review. And that was the case. The court got it right. It should have been 9-0, but it was 5-4.
This was a huge, a monumental victory for President Trump. The biggest legal win of this administration so far. A total embarrassment for crazy Judge Boasberg, who's been trying to force this president to bring foreign alien terrorists back onto American soil, trying to turn our planes around, trying to empty prisons in foreign countries and bring them back to our soil. This is a monumental, colossal victory for the rule of law, for the Constitution, for our founding generation, John Adams, who signed this law into effect in 1798, and for President Trump in fulfilling his mandate and campaign pledge. What does this mean for you and your family watching at home tonight? It means that the Department of Justice, FBI, DEA, ATF, the U.S. Marshals Service, Customs and Border Protection, Border Patrol, and Immigrations and Customs Enforcement now have maximum authority to find and remove illegal alien gang members from Venezuela that have been responsible for so much misery in this country, for the torture and murder of Jocelyn Ungaree, for the brutal slaying of Lake and Riley, those monsters can now be hunted down and expelled from this country with speed, force, and efficiency. This is a great day for America, Sean.
The court also held that the case should not have gone to D.C. since the plaintiffs were in Texas. And to me, that's a repudiation against judge shopping. So I think that's another big win, because that is a tactic. What the left can't get done electorally or legislatively, they run to judicial activists on the court to try and get it done that way. So I think that's a blow to that process and that strategy that they use.
And what it means is that now all of these crazy left judges are on notice that President Trump is fighting back against lawfare. He's fighting it back against judge shopping and forum shopping. And we're going to protect the powers of the president, and we're going to protect the people of this country.
I have to apologize to John Roberts. He was with the majority, not the women. So it was actually the guys versus the girls in that decision, 5-4. But again, another big victory for a court that favors Donald Trump. Like Mr. Fleury has written about for years, this court favors him and rules on his behalf in many cases. It's amazing the things that become controversial now, trying to deport these crazy murderers, and a judge actually saying you have to bring him back. And four Supreme Court justices agree that that should be done. Well, as I mentioned earlier, there are things that President Trump can get right on you know, a physical level, and there's things that he's getting totally wrong. Pete Hegseth, he was in Panama, or I think he's there right now, and they're talking about taking back that canal. There's articles in the Trumpet about that canal specifically, the gate in prophecy in Deuteronomy. You can read about that. You can read about it in the Trumpet. So there's that positive development, but at the same time, President Trump is announcing that he wants to get a deal with Iran. He wants to have a nuke deal like Obama did with the Iranians. And this, again, like we've said, and like Mr. Fleury has said, you can't deal with these people. And there's just a fundamental misunderstanding across the board of human nature, of the ideologies of these nations trying to deal with these Gentile powers that behave like wild beasts. Notice this clip. I think this is President Trump talking about working on this deal. This is clip 5.
We're having direct talks with Iran, and they've started. It'll go on Saturday. We have a very big meeting, and we'll see what can happen. And I think everybody agrees that doing a deal would be preferable to doing the obvious. And the obvious is not something that I want to be involved with, or frankly, that Israel wants to be involved with if they can avoid it. So we're going to see if we can avoid it. But it's getting to be very dangerous territory. And hopefully those talks will be successful. And I think it would be in Iran's best interest if they are successful. We hope that's going to happen.
It wasn't a very productive visit for Bibi. They talked a bit about the trade deals, but President Trump in there, he was praising Erdogan of Turkey. He's talking about doing this deal with the Iranians. And of course, there's the ceasefire with Hamas that he's backed off on a little bit. But how could he go back and try to deal with these nations again the way that Obama did? You could say, well, maybe the motivation is different, but the outcome would be the same. If the Iranians are willing to do that, it's because they know it will help them get that nuke. These nations respect power. I mean, it doesn't get as different as Trump and Obama. And yet that is all man's way of dealing, all man's way of doing things. And it still leads to failure. Notice this clip. This is Michael Oren. He's talking about, well, this is why Trump would be different than Obama. Clip 2.
Why do you think the Trump administration could strike a better deal than the Obama administration?
Well, first of all, because of the credible military threat. Obama had all options on the table, you remember. But I don't think people actually believed it. I think that now with the United States bombing the Houthis the way they have, that's sending a message to Iran, a rather unequivocal message, that this administration is willing to use force to a degree that previous administrations, certainly to previous Democratic administrations, were unwilling to use that type of force. And the Iranians are aware. How should we say this? This president is not predictable in that way. And that Iranians like predictability. They don't like dealing with the uncertainty that President Trump could turn around and give that order to those B-2 and B-1 and B-52 bombers to go into Iranian skies.
I get it. You don't want to say you're not going to do that. But banking on the fact that, well, he's a little more unpredictable, that's not going to get you success in the long term. Read Mr. Gerald Fleury's article. I think it's in this latest issue of the Trumpet magazine. Does Donald Trump know the way to peace? There it is. It's the first article in there. It says, having peaceful relations with other nations is a good goal to pursue, but not at the expense of trusting in God for protection. Sadly, Mr. Trump has continued to bring a flawed approach to peacemaking in the Middle East. Even before taking office, he pushed Israel into signing a deal with Hamas, releasing hundreds of terrorists and murderers in exchange for hostages. This deal gives an illusion of peace while undermining real peace. The way the president pressured Netanyahu into accepting a ceasefire deal with Hamas was shameful. He is determined to prove he can end the war, but there are times when threats arise that must be fought against. To negotiate your way to a solution is to make a deal with the devil. The way he dealt with Hamas was, just like with Putin, dealing with the devil. This type of peace is not of God's doing. It's a monumental mistake. And then going on talking about that ceasefire, he says, it seems President Trump is realizing what a mistake that was. He has since given Netanyahu the freedom to abandon the ceasefire and resume its war on Hamas. On March 5th, he posted, I am sending Israel everything it needs to finish the job. Not a single Hamas member will be safe if you don't do as I say. We will see what happens. If Israel wants to survive, it must win that war. At the same time, President Trump also says he wants to do a deal with Iran over its nuclear program. If he does, that will be yet another deal with the devil. Any deal will expand Iran's ability to spread its evil terror across the Middle East. It threatens to unleash more October 7 massacres. Look at this world that a man who trusts only in himself is trying to manage. And it will lead to failure. There might be a little points of relief or temporary success that allow them to build momentum, but the trend line is in the wrong direction because it's not pointing towards God. There's so many things that we have to understand. If you watch this show, you would know. You know about the spirit world. You know about human nature. Even looking at just history in itself. Like Mr. Fleury was saying the other day on the show, Mr. Stephen Fleury, about the comedians can look at the history of Germany and say, is this really what we want to be doing? But to say that is, I mean, a lot of people, even in the conservative side, will say, that's racist. You can't talk like that. Or they'll say things like, that's Jewish propaganda. The Germans didn't start those wars. And we have to understand that there is a spirit world. We have to understand history. We have to understand human nature and Bible prophecy. We have to know the identity of nations in the Bible. We have to understand what happened to the 12 tribes of Israel. We have to know the United States and Britain in prophecy. We have to understand the kings of the East, the king of the North, and the king of the South. And all of that means that we're looking to God's Word. We're looking to the Bible. We're turning to Him for that guidance and instruction, to tell you what will happen. You don't have to worry about or rely on someone who's unpredictable. Say, well, that's his strength. We don't know what he's going to do. Well, speaking of Bible prophecy, one of the most, I think, just personally amazing things that Mr. Fleury started talking about before the election last year was Barack Obama losing his power and God revealing that in Amos 7. Go back and read those articles about Obama being silenced and look at how that developed. You go back to 2015, 2016, that was a pretty frightening time with the rioting that was going on in Charlotte and Philadelphia. Look at 2020, that affliction after the BLM riots, that summer of love. Look at the power that they had, that they were willing to destroy. And then to say that that's going to disappear, again, like it covered earlier, that's God's mercy. God stopped something, and it's nothing short of a miracle that it stopped. I mean, it's inexplicable in physical terms that that would have just gone away. This clip, again, Obama, you hardly hear from him. You hardly see him. Notice this clip. He was speaking at, I think, a university. This is clip 8.
It is up to all of us to fix this. It's not going to be because somebody comes and saves you. The most important office in this democracy is the citizen, the ordinary person.
He's literally more silent as well. I think his pauses are getting even longer, and he's looking a lot older. But nobody's coming to save you. He was the savior in 2007, 2008, even just in 2020. Well, when Obama comes out to campaign, that's how you do it. He's going to save that campaign. This is a CNN poll. Democratic Party's favorability drops to a record low. Democrats who overwhelmingly consider Trump too extreme have yet to consolidate around any one-party leader to serve as a counterpoint. Asked in an open-ended question to name the Democratic leader they feel best reflects the core values of the party, 10% of the Democratic-aligned adults named Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, 9% named Kamala Harris, 8% Bernie Sanders, 6% Hakeem Jeffries, 4% named former President Barack Obama and Texas Representative Jasmine Crockett. That's how far down he is. He's with the girl with the fake accent. God is silencing that man. God has silenced, I mean, that radical left in so many ways. Here's another clip from a Clinton advisor, a former Clinton advisor. It's just saying, I don't know who to look to. This is clip 6.
I find myself thinking a lot about Bill Clinton these days. And, I would argue that he was probably the smartest, most gifted Democrat politician of the past several decades. And he used to drive everybody crazy with his triangulation when he would find that third way of doing things. And I look at the Democrat Party today and I don't see, I scratch my head and I don't see, I can't figure out who it is that has that kind of political wisdom. Who do you think will emerge from all of this and maybe lead your party in a smarter direction?
You know, at this point, I really don't know.
It's gone. I don't know. They don't know where to turn. But you look even just at 2023 or the summer of 2024, that lawfare against Trump shooting him on July 13th, 2024. I went back to the book Great Again, where it talks about how the radical left, the communist left, took over the Democratic Party in the United States, and they destroyed that party. You see it now. A lot of Democrats were complaining that Obama left us high and dry. He destroyed it. He's just walked away, and now we don't have anything left. And Great Again, it says, you do not have to look hard to find evidence of communism's influence in America today. The New Left was a powerful political movement that swept through the nation in the 1960s and 70s. Agitators and educators worked to bring about changes in homosexual rights, abortion, gender roles, drugs, and other issues. And later it talks about how they infiltrated the Democratic Party. He later says, regarding the communist goal to overthrow the government, Mr. Armstrong went on to write, "Of course, if it could do this peaceably at the polls, it would, but it knows it can't. That was true at the time, but in recent years, these radicals have been able to win at the polls. This shows how much America has degenerated. The radical left has gained control of the government and much of the country. What is the left's end goal?" I mean, think back to the power that they had to cancel you, to silence your voice on social media, on YouTube, having your program removed. And then it's just gone. Mr. Armstrong continued, "If it could do it peaceably at the polls, it would, but it knows it can't, so it does stand for the violent overthrow of the United States government. This is what it is all about. It has never been merely a political party. It is a movement to destroy the government of America, and it has succeeded on an amazingly high level." And then it stopped. Then it went silent. For what? To what end? Read America Under Attack. Read Great Again. Read every issue of The Trumpet as it comes out to know what God is doing with this nation, to know what God expects from you. Hearing President Trump talk a lot about making deals, I was thinking about your covenant with God and what you agree to do. And the way God works, he doesn't sit down and you hash out a contract. Well, if you can do it this way and it's different for everyone, God sets the terms and he gives you the choice. And most people in their relationship with God, they want to set the terms. And that will never work. Our part is to choose. Deuteronomy 30 and verse 19. "I call heaven and earth to record this day against you, that I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore choose life, that both you and your seed may live, that you may love the Lord your God, and that you may obey his voice, and that you may cleave unto him, for he is your life and the length of your days, that you may dwell in the land which the Lord swore unto your fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, to give them." God sets those terms, and he says, if you do what I say, you will have long life. You will have the abundant life. You will have peace and joy and happiness. This is what man wants, but they keep going the way that leads to the exact opposite. Go through Galatians 5. You see, there's the works of the flesh and there's the fruit of the Spirit. And you look at this world today and be honest with yourself about which way it's going. Do you see those fruits of the flesh or do you see the fruits of the Spirit? Like I said earlier, it's very simple with God. Jeremiah 17 and verse 5, "Cursed be the man that trusts in man." And then two verses later, "Blessed is the man that trusts in the Lord." God wants to give you all of these things. He wants peace. He wants there to be joy and happiness. But you have to do it his way, the way he has set. You choose. I just wanted to conclude with one more quote from Mr. Fleury's article about the way to peace. He writes, "In striking the deal with the United Arab Emirates, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu referenced Psalm 29, verse 11. This is going back a few years ago. "The Lord will bless his people with peace." Mr. Fleury says, "I wrote, the question is, are these world leaders seeking peace God's way? Mr. Trump and Mr. Netanyahu are talking about Abraham, but they are not talking about what Abraham did and how he lived. Abraham was so faithful and obedient, he was willing to sacrifice his and his wife's only son, Isaac, because God commanded it. Abraham placed his entire trust and confidence in God. For this, he is described as the father of the faithful. To have true peace, we need the faith of Abraham. In your own life, if you emulate Abraham's example and follow his faith, you can have peace and hope that is a million times greater than any deals being worked out in the Middle East. Have that faith of Abraham, 100% reliance and trust in God. Well, thank you very much for joining us on today's Trumpet Daily. Mr. Stephen Fleury should be back with you tomorrow. If you have any comments for the show, you can send those to td@thetrumpet.com. Don't forget to request any of the free literature that we offer on this show. And again, we thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you tomorrow.